ready for this?
Campus FM jipprezenta għalfejn il-lejla? Ħars allura lejn l-era ta' twelit u tkattir ta' diskoteki f'pajjiżna, kif ukoll ta' Pacheville bħala l-kapitali ta' xena ta' divertiment ta' bil-lejl. Produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni tiegħi Colin Fitz. Għalfejn il-lejla 103.7 Campus FM jina Colin Fitz u sensiela tkompli illum ħan kompli l-intervista lil-ġodi fit-teni dwar ix-xena ta' snin 80 tal-gruppi mużikali u tinje fej kienu jirreħersjaw u anka periodu mbagħad wara li ġilura mill-Ingilterra fi snin 90 insomma għandu ħafna stejjer xjajdinna l-ġimgħa l-oħra tkellimna dwar il-magazine Far Out li hu kien involut fih ukoll. Però l-vuċi ta' Jody smajtuha kemm il-darba, u x'veru Jody, various adverts over the years, also a documentary that had been very, very popular, and a series of programs about the sea way back in the early 2000s. You had done the voice
That's
for
right.
it, right?
Yes, it started in the late 90s with Sean Arrigo.
Dearly departed, R.I.P. Sean Arrigo, yes.
Yeah, great guy.
Yes, he died young.
Yeah. It's he had managed to go around the world and basically dive you know the major oceans and the seas and came back with so much footage, a mountain of footage. So he wanted to put it out as a series, as a as a biodiversity documentary called called Planet Sea, and I was lucky enough to be asked to narrate on that. So that was absolutely fantastic.
And our listeners can access some of those episodes, if not all, on YouTube.
On YouTube, yeah.
On YouTube. Yeah. So it's I thoroughly recommend it. It's a very interesting documentary. And Jody's voice is on it, but we're back to the 80s, and people like you, and you mentioned Eric Il Punk, who I assume would dress as a punk, and you would dress in your sort of new wave, alternative, underground, but what's it, not emo, and later they called them emos, but gothic style, perhaps some makeup as well, and... You know, you'd catch buses, you'd go around where people would be dressed very conservatively, much more conservative than nowadays, in the 80s.
Sure.
What reactions did you get from people, and people like Eric, and people, other people like you who were in bands, and who lived the lifestyle of musicians and artists, rather than simply took it as a hobby?
Well, yeah, no, hobbies are not a good word.
No, exactly.
In those days it was a question of, you know, there's the, like these days, I guess, there was an underbelly, an alternative, an underground scene, where, you know, not everybody subscribed to the pop music of the time or cared to. In those days, there was a very healthy alternative scene, especially coming out of the UK, and plenty of like-minded people here who would, you know, wear boots and eyeliner and basically make the statement of, I am not part of
the mainstream pop and
mainstream
rock.
Discotheques wearing jackets and polished shoes and all that stuff.
But did you get, would you get bullied? Would you get beaten up?
No.
Sometimes you read about foreign bands and they went through a phase where they would be singled out.
No.
Especially in the 70s and 80s and maybe 90s.
But was
it here, or would you just get funny looks and that's it?
No, you'd get a lot of funny looks. And, and of course, I could understand Maltese, so some of the comments were very funny and interesting because they'd presume that you were a tourist or that you weren't local.
Okay, so Dan Minyak Sepliou sort of thing, or Aladon.
Shitan, Ducky Shitan. Yeah, and all that. But, you know, you'd brush it off as a piece of fun. Basically, we were, you know, inventing ourselves as... we may not have known who we were, but we definitely knew who we weren't. So in that regard, you know, spiking up your hair and wearing dog collars and having parties in cemeteries and listening.
Oh, goodness me. Really?
Yeah, of course. Oh, but they're not the kind of dancing parties, you know, you get together with like-minded people and basically listen to the same kind of music and talk about poetry and writing and music and the scene.
Would some people misinterpret that sort of thing as a sort of black mass or something? Because I remember, like, you know, in the 80s, as a schoolboy, we'd be told, like, oh, don't play that record backwards and, you know, avoid listening to that band, and there's a black mass, don't go there.
Unfortunately, you know, especially when the bands left places like Tin Year and Fort Manuel, you get your graffiti. They go in and they don't respect the place, and they don't respect the history. And you know, we definitely were not part of that. No, we were very, very respectful. And in those days, you know, you wanted to stand out, so there'd be a place like Tunes in Floriana, which was near the ABC Theatre.
So which part of Floriana was this?
Where the old British Embassy used to be, just behind it. And the back of that, in the other street, there was an underground club called Tunes.
Tunes, okay, never heard of it.
And that was so refreshing to go to.
So not far from the hospital.
Not far from Boffa.
Boffa Hospital, yes.
Yeah, sort of near there. And as I say, you know, we used to jump on buses in those days, and make our way over to Tunes on a Friday night, and the place would be rammed, you know, loads
of music,
punks, rockers, reggae.
And they'd play your style of music.
Yes, and
so for the alternative scene.
Yeah, but also in those days, you know, the DJ wasn't cut off from the audience. You go to the DJ and you make a request. Uh-huh. And, you know, you want to hear Sex Pistols, and then somebody else wants to hear Bob Marley, and somebody else wants to hear, I don't know, Madness or The Specials.
And you'd go there as an alternative to Raffles or Polytechnic Party or...
Raffles was great, and so was Polytechnic.
Mm-hmm.
Polytechnic for New Wave and electronic music, you know, uh-huh. Soft Cell, Human League, that kind of stuff. It was great.
Because at the time, there was mainstream pop music, which you were talking about rejecting earlier on.
No.
But there was also new wave music, which was kind of commercial, but also alternative at the same time.
Yes,
wasn't it? The 80s are funny in that way.
Well, that's what made the 80s very special, I think, especially early 80s, because, you know, it came to define itself as being a whole wave of young people experimenting with different sounds and creating their own sounds.
Yes,
especially electronica and the mix of. So even, you know, the kind of catch-all phrase of new wave had an underbelly.
Indeed. I mean, to break it down very simply to our listeners, we mentioned the band Depeche Mode last week. You interviewed the songwriter.
Yeah.
They have a very popular song from early in their career called I Just Can't Get Enough.
Just Can't Get Enough.
It's still played nowadays.
Their first
hit. It's a very poppy, mainstream, happy song.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
That's when they became famous and started making money, but they have a massive, massive catalogue of music that is much darker and more experimental.
Definitely.
And that's the kind of music you subscribe to.
Well, it's,
but they would still get played on the radio thanks to their commercial stuff.
Yes, definitely.
So that's the difference. Reach out, touch faith.
I really loved The Cure up until they released Friday I'm in Love,
which was their most commercial.
And then I lost interest. although they went back. All good bands go back to their roots eventually.
But you're saying that there was a place called Tunes in Floriana that would cater yeah. to this kind of
That's service. Right.
And how many times would it open? Once a week?
Once a week, yeah, on Fridays.
On a Friday night.
And, you know, we all used to bus in, you know?
Do you know what it is now? Has it been changed? Has it been knocked down? Or
no.
Has it turned into a...
I think it's a printer's now.
A printer's now,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but in those days, as I say, you know, you'd meet other alternative thinking young people, you know, from Paola, from Zaytoun, from all over...
Where were you from?
Over the island.
Where did you live?
Well, I was San Juan until, I went to live at Tinier for a bit.
You lived in Tinier, like, watching over the equipment? Well, kind of squatting, in a way?
Band rooms, we'd do them up, you know, with carpets and soundproofing.
Oh.
To make them as comfortable as possible. I mean, we had electricity, so, you know, we'd buy a little fridge.
Oh, wow.
Or somebody else's big fridge that they didn't want.
Yeah.
And fill it with, you know, food and drink and
so
all
you
of
really
this.
Lived the life of a musician, just like you hear about, you know, British bands or American bands when they're starting off.
Yes. That's
right. Fantastic.
It was part of the experience.
And you actually lived there for a while.
Yes.
Okay. Now, tunes, okay, for your alternative music fix, but you said you would still go to the mainstream places
like Raffles. Yeah.
Any other clubs you would attend?
Well, you know, you'd go to all of them. You know, there was JJ's in Bujibba.
Tell us about JJ's, because that's another club I haven't spoken much about in this series.
Well, as an alternative group of like-minded people, you know, always dressed in black, we'd go to a place like JJ's with our records, our 7-inch and albums, with a bag.
Yeah.
You know, buy the DJ a few drinks and say, you know, would you give us half an hour on the dance floor and just play these tunes? And they would, because it introduced a variety to the evening. Yeah?
Okay.
And it had us up on the dance floor, where, you know, the more commercially minded would vacate the dance floor.
And where was JJ's?
And let us jump around.
Which part of St. Paul's Bay?
No, near the Dolmen.
Near the Dolmen.
Yeah.
And was it open every night? Probably because of, you know, British tourists, or perhaps in summer?
Especially on the weekends, Fridays and Saturdays. So, you know, we'd rotate, and then we'd go to places like Raffles. There was another bar, I think it was called the Black Rose. That was in Bujibba as well. There were various, you know, discos and nightclubs. I mean,
Stones? Did you go to Stones?
Stones, yes, I remember that. But
that was very commercial, though, and
very
mainstream,
commercial.
Wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
But you were up for a party here and there. I mean, it didn't have to be your music all the time, did it?
No, it would.
I mean, you were young and, you know, exactly. Looking to date and...
Yeah, you know.
Probably as well.
I didn't go to Stones too often. I'd pop over there, you know, if friends were going there and I had nothing else to do or nowhere else to go. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I loved being at Tinier and making music.
You mentioned Quisisana.
The three clubs that
were there were Caravelle and...
The Caravelle.
Piper, I believe, and...
Piper and Stardust.
And Stardust, that's right, yes.
Yes. And again, you know, interesting stuff. They'd play ska music.
Mm-hmm.
And good stuff to dance to, basically. You'd have a good time. But as I say, you know, we'd meet most often at Tinier, at the Torrey.
And the live bands, as you said, you had various places where you could play. Then there were the festivals, like Malta Sife, was it?
Malta Sife and Rockabuzz.
And tell us a little bit about your memories of... They sound like they were really big events that... Lots of people hungry for something to do at the time would attend. There weren't as many events as there are nowadays, for example.
We played a couple of gigs for Malta Sife and Rockabuzz. I remember at Bahare Chaat and the atmosphere being very free, basically. A lot of people, young people, meeting up. A lot of us stayed in tents. So that, you know, before the gig, do the gig, then after the gig, and relax, you know, don't have to be anywhere after that. So it was a nice sort of mini festival, if you like.
Mini Glastonbury or mini Woodstock for Malta, sort of
really
thing. Very mini.
Yes.
But thousands of people.
I don't know about thousands, but a few hundreds, yeah. And again, as you, if you can imagine, you know, in the 80s, there weren't too many organized where, you know, bands could showcase their own sound.
But But if you had played at these, when you played at these events, would you convert new people to follow you, to start following you? Would you gain new fans? I mean, because they heard your songs. Yeah. Would you play covers and a mix of both, your songs and covers? Or
A lot of bands did a couple of covers at least, especially because, you know, a lot of people wouldn't know your sound. And in that way, you would get followers because you were working on your own sound and you weren't a covers band. I remember as the Ophidian Twin, we did House of the Rising Sun, The Animals, and White Wedding, Billy Idol.
Yeah, okay.
And a couple of other tracks. Gosh, we're going back a bit. And that's why in 89, got myself over to London and joined a London band. It was all a whirlwind, basically, for a few years.
Was there a scene where you'd have like casual relationships, or was it still very?
No, it was. It was all casual relationships.
It was okay, even at the time when things were quite still uptight.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's
plus there was the AIDS. The AIDS was a new thing, and there was a bit of a panic about it.
Oh, that came later, I think. It's but you've really taken me back now. That's like 35 years ago. But otherwise, yeah, young people, alternative in mind and spirit, you know, the free spirits. So, yeah, I mean, in those days I was pretty busy. I think I had about four jobs. I was a DJ at a place called Lines in Spinola.
I remember that place. Towards its end, the end of it. It became the Irish pub now. On
that's right.
Top of the hill.
That's right.
Just above the buses in
that's
Spinola.
It. It used to be Ryan's.
Yes.
Before that, it was Lines, and I'd do a DJ night, you know, Fridays or Saturdays, which was great because all I did was play commercial music like Frankie Goes to Hollywood and Wham and all the hits of the time. I was working on artworks with Eric at Perfect Screen, which was great, you know, darkroom photography and screen printing, writing for Far Out magazine, and, you know, working on rehearsals and songs with the Ophidian Twin. So, yeah, you know, the time flew by. I was always busy.
It was a very exciting time on all levels.
Yeah.
Whether it was living the free life and being young and fun and enjoying life, and whether it was working and doing your stuff. You were doing jobs you loved.
I could be sitting at a place called Styx, which used to be under the Eden Beach in those days.
Yes.
Eden Beach Hotel. And I'd be pretty bored and thinking about, you know, leaving and going somewhere else that was maybe a bit more exciting. And then, you know, somewhere in the distance in the corner, I'd see a blue mohawk and, very nice girl. And what I found is that you kind of became a bit of a magnet for alternatives as well. And so once
you gravitate towards each other, don't you?
Exactly. And if they're playing Rick Astley on the dance floor, then you know the general idea is to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. And then you'd sort of befriend each other, and then
exactly.
You know,
that's it. Yeah.
As they say in English, Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, that's right.
It must have been fun. But what when you decided to go back to the UK in
89, yeah.
Was the scene at Tignier still happening? Were there still the famous garages, or what are called garages, but
well, it was,
the rooms? Or
it was quite controversial because in those days, especially around 89, somebody was going around and pouring petrol down the air vents of the rehearsal rooms, A couple of this happened to two or three bands, you know, where equipment was lost through arson.
Oh goodness!
Which was new to the Tinier community, at least, because we.
So it had operated for years with no trouble, and then suddenly this started to happen.
Yeah, and it was at the same time that the Holiday Inn was setting up at that time. So of course, you know, this sent a bit of a shiver through musicians and the bands, and everybody basically started leaving. So I think, you know, the last of the bands were out of there by 1991.
Do you think you were sort of being encouraged or told to leave by certain powers that didn't want to tell you directly to your face leave, but they just wanted to pressure you?
In the 80s
there were other interests that wanted that area for whatever reason.
There was somebody called Philip Parch who set up something called Rockaria.
Mm-hmm.
Rock is in the air, you know, Rockaria.
Mm-hmm.
And that went hand in hand with AST. So there were committees.
What does AST stand for? Associazioni
Sportive Tinier.
Okay. Right.
So at least there were other sort of organizations, committees, looking after the place and the people who went there and the bands. Mm. You know, you had to apply, you had to fill out a form. There'd be gigs at Tinier. So the place was relatively looked after.
Yes.
You know, better than an empty fort, rotting away, nobody's there, and falling to bits, and graffiti people going in and messing up the place. But that kind of ebbed away, so that 89, 90, a lot of the bands wanted to obviously save their equipment, and they found alternative rooms. Yeah. So, you know, I'd come back for holidays while I was in England.
Yeah.
And I'd always make a point of getting down to the Torrey, because, you know, I knew Noel and I'd known him for a few years.
Because in the 90s, Torrey was a popular haunt.
That's right.
For rock music.
I think that was with his son. But otherwise, he was again, a lovely, big-hearted man. And many times, you know, be pouring down with rain, and we're all inside the Torrey where Noel's cooking up some big, juicy burgers and chips.
But by that time, no more bands in Tinier. They had all gone off doing their own thing.
It had petered out. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a pity.
Did you get involved in the music scene in the UK?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did the London circuit. I mean, I joined a band called Shoot the Crow, which was a guitar rock band. And then we changed our name to The Switch, with various people coming and going, you know, lineup changes and stuff like this. Again, on the alternative underground scene, which is, you know, very healthy in a place like London, which is a cornucopia of all styles. And then, that morphed into a band called The Mustard Seeds, where we did various circuits and nightclubs, you know, Kensington, the Marquee, these kind of places.
All famous places.
Yeah, and we'd be learning about recording as well, because, you know, we were fortunate that the drummer Malcolm had built our rehearsal studio at the bottom of the garden. So, you know, rehearsals into, okay, how do we record ourselves? How do we capture and shape our sound? That alongside doing gigs, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times a month, which was nice. And
you lived off music in London?
No, unfortunately, you know, we all had day jobs. I was a graphic designer. But, you know, it's a question of being in the right place at the right time, which we never were.
Okay. And then you decided to come back. You came back to Malta in...
That's right. Came back to Malta 1997, yes. And
did you go out? Did you frequent any places at the time?
Well, I lived on top of the alley for 6 years.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, I was at the centre of it all.
Yes.
And that was quite an experience, because I'd come back to Malta to buy my dad's flat.
Mm-hmm.
He had a holiday place before the alley, before Parcheval, in the times of Paul's Punch Bowl.
Yes.
And there was dewdrops, I think, and hiccups.
Pretty much, yes. Is that all in Patcherville? Yeah.
That's all there was.
So he bought, but the building existed where Ali was.
That's right.
And he had a flat above.
That's right.
Okay.
Top floor.
And?
You know.
By that time, were you of the age to, were you shouting out of the window, turn it down? Or were you still, you know, up for going out? Because you were in your 30s by then, I assume.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed it for the first 2 or 3 years. going out, you know, living the life. But then it started dawning on me just how manipulated the whole place was. So, you know, seeing all the bars literally on top of each other, like a Tetris puzzle. Mm. Obviously, I was always in defensive mode of the other residents who were usually elderly, further down the road, who I came to know, who I played chess with.
Mm-hmm.
We were the locals, you know?
Yeah.
So every weekend it became a battlefield of young people out to have a good time, and so they should. But there were
the residents, of course. That was the bang. I mean, not just the noise, but the urinating in the front, on by the front doors, and
I mean, dirt. Somebody throws a bottle down on the beach. I would be that annoying person who would look them in the eye and say, "You pick up every piece."
Oh, good for you.
Absolutely.
Not annoying at all.
So students, foreigners, usually the Maltese were
quite, it helps that you're a big guy, though.
quite respectful. Yeah, I know. I don't know. I saw Patcherville change, obviously, from Patcherville, which was a very quiet little place where usually for the British forces, families.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Ball Street, you know, that's where they all were, and that's where I used to shop at Queen's Store and that kind of thing, and to see the place change so fast, was definitely an eye opener.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were fortunate to get out of there, I think in about 2003, we found a nice quiet little house in Lea. So
by that time you had settled down, and
that's right. My neighbour, mm-hmm. My neighbour was a guy called Max Portugas, and he could see me packing boxes and things like that and pushing them down the hall, and he said, "Wow, Jode, you know, good on you.
Mm.
You're leaving hell, and you're going to heaven." And I said, "Oh, Max, you know, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope he has moved on from that, because there's too much that you have absolutely no control of."
Final question: do you still dabble in bands? Did you when you came back from England? Are you still involved?
Yes, of course.
What bands should we watch out for then that involve Jode Fitani?
Well, if you want to check out I've uploaded my entire archive onto my YouTube channel, so that goes back to the 80s, through the 90s, through bands like Hunt Papa, the Mustard Seeds, and the Switch, and Shoot the Crow. And then I got together with my good old friend Gudju from the Characters.
From the Characters, yes.
And Adam Bonello. And we formed a band called The Lesser Gods. That was around 2009, 2010. And we did a few gigs. The standout gig was the Metal Gathering at the old prison in Cordeen.
Oh, yes.
And that was supporting Cannibal Corpse and Paradise Lost.
Mm. Big international bands in the scene, genre, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was really good fun. And the problem was, okay, what do we do now? Where do we go from there?
Mm.
Especially locally, you know, it's very difficult for bands to keep up the enthusiasm, especially when you're playing to, you know, small crowds in small clubs and that kind of thing. You know, there's always this itch to be doing bigger and better stuff. After that, I got together with Simon DeGuara and Alan as Digital Black, and we've been recording some fresh new material. Again, all available on YouTube.
Jode Fitani YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. It's been great talking to you and reminiscing about the 80s
yeah.
and a little bit about the 90s with Jode Fitani on Alfain and Leila on Campus FM 103.7. Thank you for joining us, Jody.
Thank you. Thank you, Simon.
Can't touch this. Bum diggy 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 bong diggy bong.